person mm-hmm. or undermine their
friend of mine recently told me she got in a fight with her boyfriend and she called him a fucking loser, and I was like, I can't even fathom calling him that. Like, that's yeah. not cool. Like, that, no, that's
yeah
not
I
cool.
mean, like I've just, and I've, you know, I mean, I think that shit's really, really unhealthy in a relationship, because it's like you do think about it does stick around after you've made up, you know, the things that you
I
say
haven't
matter.
Called someone a loser or thought of someone as a loser in so long,
right?
But you're right, it is really cutting, and I think mm-hmm. I'm gonna bring it back into my rotation for all the fucking losers I know. Hi, it's Julia. Welcome to Honey. This week we have Kim and Ben. You guys, I really let you down. I let them talk about how in love they are and their proposal for so, so, so long. If you like that stuff, enjoy it. If you want to skip right to the fighting, it starts around 13 minutes. Such a good episode. We call a friend to get a verdict on the fight. It's great. Enjoy. Bye.
Honey, 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 come home. 'Cause we've got things to talk about. I've been sitting here on my own, and I think we can work it out. Honey, 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 come home. 'Cause I think we can work it out.
Kim and Ben, welcome to Honey.
Thank
you.
Hi.
Welcome.
How are we doing?
Great.
Good. It's a Saturday. I'm happy to be enjoying my weekend, so I'm happy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Me too. Mm-hmm. Okay, so how long have you guys been together?
April will be 3 years.
Yeah.
The marker is Coachella, because I met him like 2 days after I got back from Coachella.
And that's just seared into your memory
forever. Now he comes to Coachella with us.
I believe it was like April 17th, yeah. 2014.
Yeah. Good. Do you go to Coachella every year?
This will be year 9.
Wow.
Oh yeah, we have a crew. It's a thing. It's
what do you like camp?
Oh, fuck that. No way. I didn't even try that. No, only because one person once said that the sun basically wakes you up at 6 a.m. and you're in a sweatbox. So that was all I had to hear. But We have a crew. I had an OG crew. I started going with my friend Ashley when they used to do a ticket per day. Uh-huh. And I used to work in music. I've had a billion jobs, but I used to work in music. So I knew a lot of people on crews and roadies and tours. So I would always get a free ticket. I kind of had a thing where I didn't pay for my first Coachella ticket until 3 years ago.
Oh, yeah. I see.
It always worked out.
In.
Yeah.
In with the in crowd.
Yeah. So then we have a crew and we get the same house every year. And 2 years ago, we decided to splurge and get a place like a mile away, 2 miles away from the venue. And we all rented bikes and now we bike ride back and forth.
That's so fun.
We have a bike gang.
Bikes are clutch at Coachella, it turns out, because the traffic is so bad anyway that like you can make better time just biking from a nearby house.
Now, here's my question, and certainly a lot of listeners' questions. By the way, in case anybody doesn't know, Coachella is a big old music festival in the desert.
If you don't know Coachella,
yeah,
die in a fire.
Are you not too fucked up to ride a bike?
You know, we had that concern, but it turned out to be fine last year.
Turns out, riding a bike is like riding a bike.
On drugs. No, the wind in your hair feels amazing after that show. It's great. Going there is a little rough because it's still really hot, but we tend to go after like as the sun's about to go down, so it's not 110.
Oh, so you're not there during the day?
Oh, F, no way, no way.
We get there like as sun is setting, so like probably like 4 o'clock or something.
That's
like
fun.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes you miss some good bands, but like it's just, I passed out 1 year from heat. I literally walked in. I had not had a sip of alcohol, no drugs in my system. And I dropped to the floor because of the heat. So
yeah,
I was like,
humans aren't supposed to be out there.
Yeah.
It's so for brutal. Lizards only.
and hipsters.
Okay. Lizards and hipsters. So you guys are engaged.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When did you get engaged?
October 20th last year, 2016.
Magical day. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Was it an elaborate proposal?
It was a production, but it seemed like that was appropriate for Kim, who is into productions. So it seemed like it needed to be something memorable. She had had a
For the record, I told him it didn't need to be when he said this before.
Yeah. Okay. She did, but I didn't believe her. She said she had a friend, like her best friend, got married in about a year before, or got married earlier that year and got engaged, you know, the year before, and that was like a fairly elaborate proposal with
this Rachel and Matt.
Yeah. So
scroll back. You can listen to Rachel and Matt's episode.
Yeah,
it all ties together.
No misery here.
No misery allowed.
Did they explain their engagement on the?
I don't think they explained it on the podcast, but I know about it.
It was pretty impressive. Like, he had people camped out across the street with cameras to capture the moment, and there were candles lit in an art gallery where he had sort of surprised her and everything like that. So, you know, this is Kim's best friend, and I was like, oh my God, Matt, thanks so much, man. You know, so I spent a good chunk of the next year kind of like trying to be like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And I was talking about it with one of Kim's friends, Herb, and he sort of said, well, have you thought about doing something at the Fonda where Kim works as a bartender? And I was like, no, I hadn't really considered it. Do you think that they would play ball? And he says, yeah, I think they'd go along with it. Let me talk to him for you. So he goes and gets back to me a week or so later, and he's like, well, I talked to him and they're on board. They're down to help out. So I was like, okay. And so that really sort of set the ball in motion, and then became a question of when to do it. So Kim's very into music, as you can tell from her 9 consecutive Coachellas. And she works at a lizard.
Yes, I am.
It's one or the other. She works at a live music venue. So Herb sort of innocently asked her after the October set list came out, was like, so any of these look any good? And she said, well, this band here is called Taking Back Sunday, and I actually toured with them when I was touring with Blink 182 several years ago. I became friends with their guitarist and everything, and so I was like, great, this sounds like the perfect solution. So we kind of put a pin in October 20th and started planning everything around that.
Herb is so sneaky.
Yeah, Herb was clutch.
Herb was great.
So I had to get the ring, and I created a private Facebook event that she wasn't invited to, and I invited all of...
Oh, that's so dicey.
Yeah, it is, but I made it very clear to everybody at the top of the Facebook event that this was a surprise, and I didn't tell them what it was. I just said, oh, it's Kim's Big Surprise was the name of the event, and I didn't tell them what was happening.
Smart.
And so most people assumed it was a birthday party or something like that. And at
when
least
is your birthday?
A lot of people did.
March 15th.
Okay. Those are silly people.
Yeah, they didn't really think it through. But
wait, so people didn't know what it was for?
Not until the week before. I changed the event the week before to be like, okay, here's what's going on. In fact, actually, I don't think I even then said what it was for. I just said, this is what's happening.
Long in advance did you plan? Did you do this?
Well, you had to get on people's calendars if you wanted them to be available.
My producer.
You know? So I think it was probably the event was up for at least 3 weeks before.
Okay.
But that also because I needed to inform her family and friends on the East Coast, because she has so many people back there who, you know, would have wanted to be there but obviously wouldn't have been able to. So I needed to give them enough heads up. And then one of the things that I did was I had one of her friends act as a camera person and live broadcast the whole thing on Facebook, so that her friends and
my whole family got to actually watch it in real time.
This was like a huge like public affair.
So the day of I had gotten about 35 of her friends had decided they actually wanted to be there. And so they had bought tickets to the show. Sorry, the jingling you're hearing in the background.
Puppy's collar. Cutest dog in the world.
Yeah, so the... Lucky, down.
Now he gets the ball.
There you go. So go eat a tennis ball.
Yeah,
eat the ball. So on the day of, I got 35 of her friends there. We kind of met up outside around the corner after she had gone to work, because she has to go to work a little early to, you know, get ready as a bartender. She works as a bartender at this theater called the Fonda Theater here in Hollywood, and that's where the show was. So I, we all met up, and then the venue was on board, and they had sort of scheduled her to work at this really isolated little bar up in the balcony so she wouldn't see anything, and then we got everybody.
You like mad? Were you like, why do I have to be at the balcony bar?
She was confused.
Well, hilarious. I go to work and there's like a billion people working for like Taking Back Sunday, and I'm like, what the fuck? And so we're in our pre-shift meeting, and they're like, okay guys, there's like this big event for Golden Voice, and there's a lot of like VIP industry like heavy hitters, so like Kim, we're gonna put you and Blanche up in the balcony bar. And I was like, hold up, I worked the fucking Rolling Stones by myself up there. I was like, why is Taking Back Sunday need two bar? And they were like, yeah, just there's just a thing, you just gotta go up there. Okay. So it was very fishy. And then while I was up there, the first person ordered a drink, and I was like, sorry, I'm loud. The first person was like, I need da-da-da. And I was like, oh, we don't have that, I'm going to go get it. And the chick was like, no. You just stay right here. You just stay here. Your shoulder. I'm going to go get it. Don't hurt your shoulder. And I was like, what? And then she came back and was like, so I just talked to Zach, our manager. And he was like, you know, since you've been here longer, you know the Golden Voice people, you should stay here. So you just don't leave, okay? Like, you just can't leave. And I was like, okay. And then I looked at her,
because
and I was
meanwhile,
like,
we're,
you're being weird.
Meanwhile, we're like smuggling everybody up to the rooftop of the theater so yeah, that they can.
They put me up there so they could get everybody in the main entrance.
To get everybody in through the main entrance, because the bar where she was really supposed to be bartending and where she would need to be later on would have had visibility to everybody coming in, and we didn't want her to see all her friends there. So we sort of did this all just as a way to get everybody upstairs. But the other thing I hadn't mentioned is that the plan obviously was to do this on stage during the show. And I had reached out to the band Taking Back Sunday and tried to get a hold of their guitarist to, you know, make it happen. And
I was on tour with them. I was on tour at Blink-182. I was
I did that.
The dressing rooms. No, you said I was like his friend, which
no,
we were like,
I literally just said that you had toured with Blink-182.
He did say it. Yeah. He did. Okay.
She's deaf in one ear too, so she misses a lot.
Hearing.
And I'm so I reached out to the band, you know, and managed to get a hold of their manager. But the manager was like, actually, they don't do proposals anymore. They've got too many of these requests. They used to do it. They haven't done it in years. So you should probably figure out something else, right? And I was like, man. But I had a fallback plan, which was to approach the openers, which were a band called You Blew It. And
I love that.
So fortunately, when I got a hold of their manager, he's like, well, let me talk to the band. And he comes back the next day and he says, yeah, they're on board. Like, we've never gotten to do a proposal before. They're totally
Is this
down.
Like a thing bands love doing proposals until they hate doing
I
them?
Guess, apparently. Like, once you're too successful when you're done letting people propose at your shows. Yeah. Like, no.
I feel like she was kind of just saying that.
I don't know. I don't think so.
He said they never told him that they even,
of course he did.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Whatever. So it's not like I'm bitter, but anyway, You Blew It was great, and they agreed to let us do it. So we got everybody up on the rooftop, and then the show started, and they came up with some excuse for why Kim needs to move from the bar that she was isolated at down to the main bar, which is right in front of the stage.
Which was like another weird excuse, but I was like,
but none
okay.
of this was like adding up to anything in her mind. She was just like, tonight's being weird,
yeah,
you know. And so then I ended up sneaking down to the stage, and I had three friends who went down into the sort of front of the stage pit area with cameras and stuff. And right halfway through their set, they sort of go, hey, you guys, is there someone here? You know, it's like there are a lot of people here who help make these shows happen who don't get much recognition. We wanted to take a minute to appreciate the people from the Fonda. Is there someone here named Kim?
And I'm not hearing
she's
any
like,
of this.
She's
like making deaf a Moscow
one ear and bartending at the time. So she's not hearing anything. But her boss kind of runs over to the bar and grabs her. And
well,
like,
this dude all of a sudden like literally appears at the side of the bar, and he's like, are you Kim? And I'm like, what? Yeah. And he's like, we need you on stage. And
he's,
I'm like,
the manager.
What?
The
and then my manager's like right next to me. He's like, just come with me. And he like pulls me and like drags me to the stage. And I'm like, what? And then I kind of put it together as I was walking up to the stage. I was like, I feel like I know what's happening here.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
And then they bring me on stage, and sorry.
So they bring her up on stage, yeah. and like, they're kind of like still playing the like, oh, it's bartender
appreciation
night,
and I'm
or
like,
thing.
Okay.
And, you know what, guys? We're going to pause right there. Yeah. Sure. It's going to be a cliffhanger.
Ooh.
Let's talk about all your fights. Okay. And then we'll do the rest of the proposal story to end the episode.
All right.
I love it.
I'm into it. I'm into that. What do you think about that? Hang on there.
She thinks it's bartender appreciation night. Uh-huh. Okay. So, very cute. Can't wait to hear the rest of it. So sweet. I love it. However, we're here to talk about your fights. So yes,
our fights.
Have you had... So you were telling me earlier you think fighting is important in a relationship.
I do. I do think it's important. I think you learn a lot from fighting. I think you learn how to communicate, which sounds very cliche, but if there's anything I've learned being with this man, it's that in order for us to ever last, we are going to need to learn how to communicate and fight with each other. And we're getting really good at it.
I don't like the way you say that it's important to fight, though. I don't think that is the important part. I think that it's fair to say that fights are necessary and that it's important to figure out how to manage whatever's causing the fight. But, like, I don't think the fight itself is desirable, you know?
No, the fight fucking blows. Of course not. It's the part where you talk about what happened, why you think it started, and what you did that pissed me off. It's like the communication after that's important.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's definitely true. And I think also the ability to sort of identify the fight and short circuit it before it goes through it. Like, I feel like fights tend to happen in cycles, you know, like you a lot of the time the pattern of the fight may be familiar to you and the person you're fighting with. But even if it's not, the just nature of fighting usually tends to be sort of like, because if you're fighting with someone who you are in a relationship with, ideally, hopefully, it's almost always some sort of a misunderstanding, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's not stemming mm-hmm. from one person going out of their way to do something to fuck the other person over, or like doing something that they're like, I know this is going to make that person unhappy, so I'm going to do it. Usually something has happened, or someone has sort of been thoughtless and done something selfish or something like that. And then all of a sudden someone's kind of butthurt about it. And so, like, that's the beginning. And then it goes from there. And it's like, how quickly can you figure out how to diffuse the, mm-hmm. the hurt feelings and address the problem before the cycle of sort of more and more frustration eventually erupts into, like, you know, upset. And then people have to have time apart and calm down and cool off and come back and make up. It's like, can you sort of just short circuit that so that there isn't the big explosion and the need to pull apart and that sort of thing? And it usually has to do, I think, with just checking your own ego.
Mm-hmm. Which I've noticed in myself in our relationship. Like, I grew up, I mean, I'm from New York and he's a champion debate master. So
what am I looking at over here?
His trophy? His debate trophy.
I can't see it.
His national debate trophy.
Can I?
It's really not worth looking at. It's very small.
His national championship tournament. He likes to argue.
Oh, I see. I see it now. It's an angel.
Yeah, it's an angel. Isn't that funny? But I grew up like very in a house where, like, we fought, and like I somehow along the way picked up this thing where I could, like, ice people out, like, really easily. So I could be in a fight with my mom and I could just be like, okay, I'm not gonna talk to you for 2 weeks now. And every time she would, like,
it's fucked up.
It is fucked up.
That's a long time.
Yeah. Oh, and I could easily do it. And, like, that's kind of how I operated in relationships for a long time, where I would just, like, need space. And then, like, and of course, while I'm not talking to the person, I'm, like, in my head all, like, replaying everything and getting all fucked up. But instead of just talking about it, and he's, like, one of the first people I've ever dated that he won't let me run away when we start fighting. And I tend to sometimes, and he'll come and be like, let's talk about this. And I'm like, can I just go
ice
run away?
You out for another 2 weeks?
Yeah, can I just ice you out for 2 weeks? Remember the first fight we ever got in? We didn't talk for 2 days. And you were like, what the fuck is this? And I'm like,
I don't remember that.
Yeah, remember?
No, I don't remember.
I came over to your apartment. It was 2 days. We didn't talk. And then I came over to your apartment and we both were like, this is the worst. Like, why did
what
we
were
do
you
this?
Fighting
well, I
about?
Don't, yeah, but I mean, we don't, look.
I remember what it was.
I've been in other relationships that were more volatile than this one. I feel mm-hmm. like we're not, like, we don't fight a lot. We don't fight hard. There's a lot of underlying affection in the relationship and stuff. A
lot of love.
You know, so I don't think that we fight anywhere near as nasty as some people can. And I think that we tend to keep the sort of, there are rules of fair play that tend to be kept in mind during fights anyway, you know.
What are the rules of fair play?
I don't think that they're like explicit rules, but like they just generally have to do with sort of like that like we don't get into name calling, we don't take the kind of shots at each other that like people will take when they're angry, where they really try and like hurt the other person mm-hmm. or undermine their
friend of mine recently told me she got in a fight with her boyfriend and she called him a fucking loser, and I was like, I can't even fathom calling him that. Like, that's yeah. not cool. Like, that, no, that's
yeah
not
I
cool.
mean like I've just, and I've, you know, I mean, I think that shit's really, really unhealthy in a relationship, because it's like you do think about it does stick around after you've made up, you know, the things that you
say
matter. I
haven't called someone a loser or thought of someone as a loser in so long,
right?
But you're right, it is really cutting, and I think mm-hmm. I'm gonna bring it back into my rotation for all the fucking losers I know.
You fucking loser. It's such a like Trump thing to say,
you know.
I know.
I mean, that's not true. It's not the only thing, right? Like, that we don't like break things or throw things or like yeah. you know, threaten each other's shit. I mean, I've been in fights.
Do you yell?
Occasionally, like yelling would be like an example of like it reaching the climax of yeah. the argument, you know. Mm-hmm. And usually, I mean, it'll be like a yell, but it won't be like a yell. It's rarely like a yell of any like direction. It's like not like, it's more, it's like, I remember the other day Kim like lost her shit about something, and she like had this bar cart that she was working on that was sitting over there by the door, and she like shoved it across the floor, and it kind
he was
of
micromanaging
bounced
me.
Into the door, and she goes, "Rah!" You know, and she's just like, and I was like, "All right."
I tossed it
and
into
then
the
she's
fridge
like,
and
I'm going down. I'm going down to the other room, and I'm gonna be away from you for a little while. And then I was like, "Okay, I was a jerk. So I went out and apologized."
You did.
I waited about 20 minutes or something,
yeah. And then we were fine.
That's so great.
Yeah, it took a while to get there.
Fighting's just not worth it. I mean, like, you're in this relationship where you're committed, you're going to be with this person forever, you know, like, what do you think is coming from this extended period of unhappiness with each other? Like, can you, I just like, let's just get to the part where we figure out what the, how we're moving forward, you know? And yeah. if anything, I think that that's the part that's hard for Kim, is that she kind of clings to the fight a little more than I do, where like, I'm a lot of the time, I think, really just wishing she would just be nicer to me. And then like, cause I'm a fucking softy, right? Like, if you just like, if she, I've never held a grudge, I never don't forgive someone or anything like that, you know. And so she just has the power to kind of just be like, I'm sorry, and reach out, and I'll be like, okay, fine, I'm sorry too, you know. Like, I just really want the fight to go away more than anything else, you know. It's almost never about anything really,
but it's
worth
really
it.
Hard, babe, when we're like in the midst of like being pissed at each other. I like to run away and ice people out. He has a thing, he says, I want you to come at me with love. And I'm like, I it makes sense in my head. Of course, like, when we're mad at each other, like, it makes sense for me to, like, maybe take a step back and be like, baby, is everything okay? I love you. Tell me what's wrong. But, like, in the moment, you're like, go fuck yourself. You know? You're like, just so, it's hard for me to step back, especially if he's been rude to me, and be like, baby, I love you. Even though that's probably what will work the best.
Well, the thing that I'm noticing is, like, he basically, like, he always wants the fight to be over. So mm-hmm. you know that if you come at him with love to reconcile, you know you're going to get a yes.
Yeah.
If he comes at you with love to reconcile, he does not know what he's going to get. And it's probably going to be a no. And then that's going to feel bad,
this
right?
This is such a mirror into what I'm doing. I'm so sorry.
Listen, that's why we're here.
But I think she also, right? Like,
oh my God,
the flip side is she also knows that if she wants to get me to come to her, she can just go away and wait. And she knows she'll last longer than I do, and that she's going to win that way too.
You have indulged her.
And enabled this behavior.
But
I'm like advocating some sort of weird war games. I'm like, no, you retreat even further than her.
My mom's
going to
listen to
this and
be like,
yeah,
I know
think
what
that's
he's
good
talking
advice.
About.
That's not good advice. No. No. Clearly Kim is the problem here.
Yeah. I'm definitely the problem.
No.
No, I'm definitely
no,
not.
No, I think most cases the fight does ultimately come down to me needing to apologize for something.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
But it's also, where I would compare us to like a Dharma Greg situation.
Well, a lot of
deep cut.
where I'm very like.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's totally true. It's like I'm like the a lot of our fights stem from Kim's sort of. I like to call it her everything will be fine philosophy, which literally is that everything's going to be fine. So there's really nothing worth worrying about in life.
We were just talking about this. And you know what, Kim? You can come live in my bunker. I'm not going to hold
I'll help find it. Can yeah, I buy into the bunker? Because I'm the bunker guy.
You got to get a bunker going.
I need a bunker. I mean, she literally is just like, I've never, it's weird for me because I was married before, and in that relationship, I think I was the one who was this free spirit and the other person was a person who was sort of constantly needing to feel like they needed to kind of keep me from making bad decisions. And it's just really weird for me, the role reversal where all of a sudden I'm like worried about, you know, being the responsible party and like, are we planning ahead and, you know, is this a good decision? And whereas Kim just kind of flits through life, you know, being lucky at every stage and like and believing that that represents life for everybody, right? Is just sort of like it'll
But don't you think
it's positive? I honestly feel like I manifest stuff.
Yes, yeah, and maybe in a magic way, and maybe in a I think if you're expecting people to be nice to you, you're expecting good things to happen to you, people respond to that.
I don't mean to detract anything from the idea that if you put positivity out there, you're more likely to get positivity back. I don't think there's anything supernatural about that. I think it's just the sheer nature of reality is that those things tend to yield positive results for people, and I think that's great, and it's one of the things that's wonderful about Kim. But she's lucky. She's all like, I'm not a superstitious person. I don't believe in those things at all. But at the same time, it's uncanny how consistently she gets great parking.
I'm just manifesting it.
Or like
great parking. What else?
Lots of things. Well, apartment I live in.
Yeah, I mean, she's had a lot of a very. It just seems like things tend to go her way, and yet
for instance, this afternoon there were things that were very lucky for her.
That was really scary. You know? No, but like I hear what he's saying about this luck thing, but I don't view it like that. I view it like I don't really have a lot of fear, and I think
related.
No, it is because I think. Because I don't have a lot of fear about things, I just automatically I'm like, no, I'm going to do this thing and it's going to work out and it's going to be great. So I kind of like thrust into my life knowing that. And I have a very positive experience because I think that when you, for instance, Ben, I think has a little bit more fear than I do because he's always worried about like the germs that are going to give us salmonella or the, you know, and he's not like a germaphobe. This is a very exaggerated.
A little bit of a germaphobe.
but like, I think that because we're so opposite in that way, that's the stuff that kind of causes the fights but I don't call it luck. I call it like I know what I want and I'm going to do it and there's no doubt in my mind that I can accomplish anything. So I just live my life like that and I think things just work out.
I think that gets to the nature of a lot of the fights in relationships though. They tend to do with one person being more sensitive to something than the other person and that other person not being able to kind of just happily default to the lowest common denominator, right? Like it could be something that has to do with tidiness and cleanliness, right? Like if one person feels that the dishes always need to be done, you know, before everybody goes to bed and you just can't leave dishes in the sink overnight versus another person who's like, eh, fuck it, I'll take care of it in the morning, right? You have the option as that second person of being like, well, I don't know why you're so uptight about this. It doesn't bother me, so I'm going to keep leaving my dishes out, right? And then driving your partner insane. Or just being like...
The counter.
Or being like, oh, this is a thing that person cares about, so I'm going to go ahead and default to their level of sort of tension about it and just be okay with that because that will keep them happy. And like, you can say, like, it's not, it goes both ways for us, right? Like, you know, you made it clear some time ago, it drives me nuts that when we have people over or something, you're just leaving empty beer bottles on the counter instead of putting them all the way into the recycling bin, which is all the way into the kitchen.
2 feet next to the counter.
You know, it's around the counter and into the kitchen and the far wall.
It makes it sound like it's a mile away. It's literally an extension of your arm.
A lot of the time I'm just like, oh great, we got a bunch of stuff out here. I'll take it over there and sort of treat that counter as a staging area for when we finally clean things up. That's my approach. She doesn't like it. So what do? Now I just take everything straight to the recycling bin. Not because I think she's right, but because I don't want to fight. You know?
And thank you for that.
And
I've noticed you've really been good about
and
that.
And I think you're welcome.
I really appreciate
and
it.
And you know, and she doesn't feel like she needs to wash her hands after she handles raw chicken that as much as I okay. do, you know? So
that is not true.
Well, she's lucky.
Okay.
She's lucky.
What could happen?
Can I just speak to this for 1 second?
Yeah.
Because it was early on.
Lucky. Oh, he's lucky.
He's the cutest. It was early on where, you know, we both cook a lot. And
my water lucky.
Is he licking your stuff?
No, it's okay. I don't care.
Oh. Well, then. But early on, we cooked a lot, and he...
We still cook a lot.
We always cook a lot. No, we always... I'm saying early on this came up where I would handle the chicken, and, like, I would use, like, the back of my hand to, like, flip up the faucet and then, like, take it out. And he was like, babe, you got to wash your hands in between every single time. And I'm like, no, but I'm just like opening. I'm just like, he just has a different level of what is considered sanitation, which I am a sanitary
person. Wait, so what would you do after the chicken?
Like, I'll cut it open. I'll take it out of the package. So I'm handling it, right?
Handling the chicken.
And then I
chicken.
Put it on the like paper towel lined plate, like uh-huh. it says. Uh-huh. And then I have to like rinse my hands and stuff. Yeah. So I'll like use my hand to lift it up and like I'll like rinse my hands. And then I'll take the chicken package and I'll like go to throw it out. But he's like, you should wash your hands in between handling the package and then putting it down and then washing them again.
That's not, you're mischaracterizing it a little bit.
Yes. Yeah. You explain it because it sounds a little crazy.
It's not important. Crazy. All that it really is like, if you, like, a better example would be Kim, she doesn't seem to be as concerned about the transference of germs from certain things. Like she doesn't see the ground as particularly dirty.
No, I'll wear no shoes all day.
I see
all night.
The ground as filthy, right? Like yeah. if you
he
walk
makes me
around,
wash my feet
if you walk around
bed.
All over, if your feet are brown on the bottom, wash them before you get in the bed.
Like he'll be like, you are not like, getting don't in this get bed. In the go bed. Wash your feet. I'm like, and then it feels really good, so it's whatever. But we just have different levels of concern about those things. But then. What's funny about this?
I feel like it's me who has to be the one like, no, babe, the dog's not allowed to walk on the pillows because the
no,
dog's
feet
are not clean.
That
you know?
I agree with. But it, what's
you
funny
gotta get
about
some
this,
puppy wipes by
I
the
have
door.
Those.
Do you?
I should shut off my phone. Where is my phone? Can you grab phone it? It's on your side, babe. But what's funny about this is we were at his house for Thanksgiving, and his parents are who I love. They're amazing. We're like. Teaching us the like way to prepare the turkey because we're gonna probably eventually start taking over the holiday, and he's like, babe, check out the recipe my parents have for how to make the chicken. And I'm reading it and it's like, place turkey in sink, then put turkey in pan, immediately bleach the sink. And I was like, oh, it makes so much sense now. But it bleached the sink was like maybe on there two or three times throughout the process of preparing a turkey. So I was like, okay,
I
get
know what?
It.
Those things get on there for a reason. Mm-hmm. Something went wrong one time.
Did it, though?
Well, probably not, because it was done.
Mm-hmm. but to that point that he was making of, like, wanting to... Knowing what sets your partner off and, like, trying to avoid that because you love the person, that also applies to us. When we are driving in a car.
She's really good about
knowing. Driving in a car is bad. That's a pattern here on Honey.
Oh, my God.
But you know why?
I hold that
shit in. I believe it was Emily of Danny and Emily who theorized that, like, driving a car is, like, the ultimate metaphor for control. So, like, all your control issues come out when you're in a car.
That makes so much sense. Holy shit.
Yeah.
We... Like, just never be
this
with
girl,
us in a
by
car.
The way,
just never do
sits
it.
Sits in the middle of the back seat when her husband drives because she thinks he's a dangerous driver. Isn't that hilarious? Does he do that?
I fear for my life every time I'm in the car.
Oh,
right now.
Really?
Such
and
hypocrisy.
He doesn't try sitting in the middle back seat.
Such hypocrisy.
I don't even think I wouldn't even do that because he has a stupid ass race car that has no door handles that you can hang on to. So that wouldn't even make me feel comfortable. So now I just have
you
to sit there
need
and
to
take it.
Hang on to a door handle when you're in a car. Now, are you a dangerous driver, yes. Ben?
I'm a bit aggressive as a driver, but I...
that is such an understatement. Call his mom right now.
Listen, I'm respectful when she says, I want you to drive more calmly. I do. Mm-hmm. I mean, it,
have
I don't
you ever
like
gotten
it.
In a car accident?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
See? Why don't you drive more See? Cautiously then?
Well, there,
he drives
there,
like
a lot
I'm
of
like...
them are not a product of me having... of me driving aggressively.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and the accidents that I've had haven't been severe or recent or anything like that. But like, you know, I think the truth is that she's a very similar driver in her own right. So that's part of what bothers me about it, is
not
that
even close.
Things that I will do, she gets upset that she would do if she were driving.
Like what?
Here's the main difference between our driving. Ben drives like I'm giving birth and I'm like crowding in the car and he's like fucking racing to the hospital.
Sometimes we're in a hurry.
Which means he's up people's asses. I drive very offensive. I drive very defensively in that I am aggressive, but I always keep a car length of distance between the car in front of me. I never drive like there's like this anxiety about the way he drives that it's like immediately I feel.
I think
this
has everything to do with her not being in control, to be honest.
Well, I'm sure that's a big part of it.
Why do you guys have such a different perception of your driving?
I mean, we could just go poll people and then you'll have the facts. But because I think ultimately when I come at him when he's driving and instead of and he's gotten so much better with like he's like, OK, I'll slow down. But in the beginning, it would just be an immediate fight because he would come back at me not with I'm sorry, I'll go slower. He would come back at me with you drive just as fast as me. You can't even come at me with that. Like he took this stance of like. You're a hypocrite.
A hypocrite.
No, I'm not.
Let's be clear. This exact fight happened in the other direction last weekend, right? And instead of immediately calming down and doing what I was asking, she repeatedly told me that I was being overreacting.
In Joshua Tree?
On the way to Joshua Tree, in Joshua Tree.
So no. You had said, Kim, slow down.
Yeah.
And she said,
yeah, she's
no.
Driving her, she's driving her 2003 Tercel shitbox of a cardboard car.
It's an Echo.
At like 90 miles an hour down the 10 in the rain.
And it wasn't raining.
I'm like... whatever.
You guys are disagreeing about the facts.
It wasn't raining. It wasn't raining that in that circumstance, but it was. I mean, she definitely like
we went
was making decisions that I was uncomfortable. I mean, at the end of the day, all that really should have mattered was I was going, babe, please calm down. And you don't need. Fine. It was 80 miles an hour. It wasn't raining. But she was doing her makeup at the time.
No, I was
like
looking
that,
for
right?
a CD.
And I'm like,
I was looking for a CD, and I did swerve a little, and he got very nervous. Sorry, I'm very loud.
No, you just keep talking and I fiddle with the knobs. That's how it works.
Got it. But no, he.
You know, I mean,
and
one time
right.
I had to catch the dog with one arm as she'd slammed on the brakes, and the dog, which was standing up with its face against the window, started flying towards the dashboard. I mean, so it's like there's a third time where like. We're going off.
That was the guy in front of me stopped short.
We're off roading in Joshua Tree all of a sudden, and we're like off the curb on an unpaved shoulder, and she's not even slowing down.
This is such an exaggeration. I'm going to just retell the story, and I wish we could call the two people that were in the car with us because they both made a comment being like, he was flipping out over and over.
Can we call them?
Yeah, let's call them right now.
But you tell your side first, and then we'll call them.
Okay, cool. So my side is we are in Joshua Tree, and we decide to go to Pappy and Harriet's, and I'm pretty sober and I'm like I could just drive us, so we're on the way and it had rained that day, so it was wet, it wasn't raining at the time. And then on the way to Pappy and Harriet's, there's the street that I remembered had this like amazing tree where this like old man's face is carved into it, and we're driving and I'm like guys, the tree, and I like peel a right off this block and I'm like, you guys, we're gonna see this tree. So we're like going down, but it's dark and there's really no lights there, so we're trying to remember because I'd taken him with my parents the last time we were there
to see the old man tree
okay. Joshua. And so we're like going down, and then I was even like, oh, I don't remember this convenience store, but I'm just gonna
you'd
keep
have gone
going.
Off-roading twice on this trip already at this point.
The
off-roading
literally on driving, just driving on unpaved.
So we're on the road and we're going down the road. And basically, it turns into a dirt road. It's still
this is separate
a street.
From the highway incident.
Yes.
Okay.
Same trip though.
Still same a day. Road where cars are on, and he immediately freaks out and is like,
"Babe, slow down,
babe. Your tires. We're gonna die." Like he basically
As
just freaked
rule,
out.
As a rule, if you go from paved pavement to unpaved Sand. Areas, you slow down a little bit because probably the surface is not as well suited for your vehicle as it was before. I mean, you're driving this shitty old car with these tiny little old tires
Fear.
On it.
Fear.
Fear. I just didn't want to have a blowout and not be able to get to Pappy and Harriet's. It's not like I thought we were going to die in a fiery wreck. I just was like, babe, be smart with your tires.
But you didn't say it like that. You freaked out. And then because I knew he was upset, I stopped and I turned around, even though I knew the...
I remembered the tree was
just a little further down. And even though I knew that, I was like, I don't want to upset him. So I'm going to turn this car around and just go to Pappy and Harriet's. And everything.
And ice him out.
And I didn't ice him out. I didn't ice you out. We had a great night.
It was fine. It was fine.
But I was pissed. I was more upset because it was his nervousness about being off the dirt road and him freak. He like just, his reaction was very like to freak out. And there were two other people
all the
in the
time
car.
When I'm driving.
Yeah, but we're alone.
That's what I'm saying about that. Yeah, but.
Well, there was two other people in the car with us.
I was worried about their well-being too.
I don't think they were.
Well, we'll
okay, we're going to call him.
Call
okay.
Herb. Call right, Herb and ask him.
It's Herb.
Yeah,
Herb. Herb. Okay, cool. Let's call Herb. Oh my god, this
do you have callers on your show?
We've never called anyone before, and I'm so excited.
This is awesome. Okay, cool.
I don't know how this is gonna work.
And Herb
with the audio. I think we're just gonna hold the mic up to the speaker.
Okay, cool.
Sorry, Ryan.
Oh, he's
that's my producer.
He's
I don't think this is how podcasts officially do phone calls, but
I suspect he's at work.
Well, he has work tonight, but I don't know if it was a 6 or 7 o'clock call time. He's at the Roxy.
Yo, what up?
Yo! Oh my god. Okay, Herb, I'm just going to really briefly fill you in. We are recording a podcast live right now. Say hi, everyone.
Hi, Herb.
Hey, what's up, everybody? How you doing?
And
hey,
it's
you're on Honey with Julia Meltzer. Hi.
And the podcast is about how couples fight. And so we got into the topic of the Joshua Tree incident of when we went to go looking for the tree.
The old man tree.
Yeah. And do you want to ask him, Julia?
I want to ask him.
Okay,
you guys sort it out with Herb. I'll shut up.
Herb, simple question. Do you recall when Kim...
You keep talking to your mic also. Yeah. Into her mic? Okay, yeah.
Do you recall when Kim, at least once while we were trying to drive to Pappy and Harriet's, wound up partially or completely off-road?
Completely off-road?
Right. Remember we were driving at one point, no, she was just riding on the unpaved shoulder?
No, it wasn't an unpaved shoulder. She was driving on an actual street that turned into a dirt road.
That happened at one point, but there was also a point where we were on an unpaved shoulder and
no,
she
we're
had,
not talking about that. We're talking about this going
this was
to the
all,
tree.
All this happened three times on that trip. You wound up with your wheels off the road.
Ask Herb that question.
Do you remember that, Herb?
I don't recall that, no.
Yes! Oh!
It doesn't
yes!
make him it doesn't make you right. It just means that he doesn't remember. Fine. The one time you do remember when we
let Herb talk.
Let me refresh my statement. I don't recall that because I don't ever, and I was probably the most sober one. I don't
more sober than Kim, who was driving.
I was the most sober one.
I don't recall that.
Okay, but you do recall at least one time when the road suddenly stopped being a road and became an unpaved road, right?
It became a dirt road, yeah.
Right.
And what did Ben do?
Wait, let
him talk.
And what did Ben do?
Yeah, just retell the story from your perspective.
All right, so riding down the road. Around with Pappy and Harriet, Kim said, oh, there's a tree. And she wanted to go and make a right down the road to go show us this tree. We're driving down the road for a little ways, and we don't see the tree. It keeps going down, and we still don't see a tree. The tree should have came up, I think, but it didn't go, and we kept going. But as you kept going, we passed this like kind of intersection, and then it turned into a dirt road. And up ahead, there was like some construction truck or something with like some flashing lights or something.
This is no information.
At that point, I think Ben saw that and was like, Kim, what are you doing? No, we got to go. We got to go. She's like, no, I think it's still up there. Ben was like, no, we got to get, you know, like, let's forget the tree. And then we ended up turning back around and coming back and not going to continue to see the tree. Although, let me refresh, we did turn back around and Kim was like, wait, I know where it is. And then we stopped at the intersection for about a good 25 seconds as she was thinking where this tree was. And then we kept going and went to Pappy and Harriet's. Mm-hmm. That's what happened.
Okay, I have a question for Herb. Okay. Hi, Herb. It's Julia. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. It's so nice to meet you. Who is a more dangerous driver, Kim or Ben?
Who's a more dangerous driver?
Yeah, that's what we're kind of talking about.
Okay. Dangerous-wise? I don't know. Ben's an aggressive driver. driver.
That's exactly what he said. Okay.
Yeah, but
and how would you describe Kim's driving?
How does he describe Kim's driving?
Yeah, how would you describe Kim's driving?
Oh, it's not as aggressive. I mean, it's fine.
Fine.
I mean, if I had to put an adjective to it, I mean, it wouldn't be like she's a bad driver.
Okay.
But,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is good.
Do you guys have follow-up questions for Herb?
I have a follow-up question for Herb. Herb, when we hit the dirt road in Joshua Tree from the paved road that we were on, I was like, babe, slow down, because the road was full of potholes and rocks and things like that, and it didn't seem to me that she had slowed down at all from being on the paved road. Does this ring any bells for you?
The slowdown portion of that thing?
Yeah.
No, I don't remember.
All right, well, you're clearly not.
You
were
talking over him.
All right.
Let him finish his thought.
I'll tell you what I do remember.
All right.
What I do remember is once I noticed that you're on a dirt road, and you had, when you said, hey, Kim, you know, you're like, Kim, we need to go, you basically were like, we need to go back. Like, let's forget this. So it was more about, let's forget this. You can't find a tree, let's go back.
Yeah.
I think partially it was because there was something up ahead in the road, which probably would have prevented us from continuing to go. So you were trying to get us.
Well, also,
I
had been to see this tree before and didn't recall us having to go off road in order to get to it. So I was like, oh, I think we must have missed it. It was nighttime now. It was daytime before. I don't recall the off road part. I think we should turn around because we're off roading in the middle of Joshua Tree. It's 40 degrees out. It's nighttime. We were going somewhere else. Like, let's go back.
But you kind of freaked out a little bit. Herb, anyway. Is it fair to say that Ben overreacted slightly, maybe? No, I'm being honest.
Not to put you on the spot.
No, yeah, and you don't have to answer that if you don't want to.
I'll be honest. He was a little anxious, you know. It's one of those points where you're sitting in the back of a car with a couple, and all of a sudden the conversation gets a little bit, like, nitpicky and edgy. And mm-hmm. It's like, oh, okay, well, yeah.
We were those
and,
people.
And, you know, what do? You stay out of it. You don't say anything.
Okay, Herb, so, I got another question for Herb. I got another question for Herb. Okay. Herb, would you describe yourself as
myself?
No, well, I'm going to give you two options. As an optimistic person or a fearful person?
I'm more of an optimistic person.
Very true.
Who kind of is very objective and lives in reality. So, which, yeah.
Okay. Which is why he's a good sounding board for this.
You know.
Yeah.
I'm always going to veer on.
Me too.
Doing the safer, being on the safer side of things than trying to do something.
So ask him if he thought I was.
Certain things to me aren't very dangerous. You don't have to be super dangerous, but that's what I would say.
Yeah. Okay. What do you want me to ask her?
Ask him if he thought that I was overreacting when I was concerned about Kim's decision to release our 8.5-pound puppy in the Joshua Tree desert in a hot dog costume at night with coyotes out.
Did you hear that, Herb?
No, something about a puppy.
Yeah, did you think Ben was overreacting when Kim wanted to let the dog out into the desert in a hot dog costume?
No, that wasn't no reaction.
That was inappropriate. That was,
and yeah. I thought it was funny, yeah, yeah.
There are coyotes who eat dogs out there. So.
Yeah. No, I didn't think that was an overreaction.
I'm a little lucky with not survive very much.
Cool. Herb, are you in a relationship?
Am I in a relationship? No.
Okay. Do you have an ex that you're friendly with?
Would you like to be on a podcast?
Yeah. Do you have an ex you're friendly with?
Mm-hmm.
Will you guys come on the podcast and talk about your fights?
Probably not.
Okay, we need to let Herb go on with his life.
Okay, you gotta go to work. Thank you, Herb. You've been very educational. We love you.
Awesome. Okay. All right, thank you, guys.
Make money bye, tonight. Herb. Have fun at the show.
All right.
Okay, bye. And there you have it.
That was Herb.
Yeah.
Herb's great.
Okay, that was Herb.
Oh, from the engagement story.
Yes.
Yeah. That's
yeah.
Herb. That's Herb. Yeah.
Okay, let's cut back to the engagement story.
All right, let's do it.
So, it's the
they're
night
telling
of
me bartender appreciation.
Fonda, she's up on stage.
Yeah.
So I sort of walk out as she's up there at this point. She turns and sees me, and I think at that point she was not too surprised by the fact that I was up there. And I sort of walk up and I take the microphone from the lead singer of the band and I go, I turn to the audience and I
say,
"You
should just play what you say."
We
have it all on tape. But anyway, go ahead. You say it. Just say it.
Well, I'm not going to do the whole speech. It's too cheesy. But I definitely did. I turned to the audience and I'm like, "Hey, everybody, my name is Ben. This is my girlfriend, Kim. She's a bartender here at the Fonda. She's been serving you guys tonight. Sorry to interrupt your show, but I was hoping you could give me just a minute. I need to ask her a very important question."
And then he got down on one knee.
Drop to one knee, whip out a ring, say some really nice things, crowd goes wild, you know, boom, you're engaged.
Well, just back it up a sec. He does this, right? And I'm just like, you know, you think in those moments, you think about that moment sometimes, especially because we had been talking about getting engaged. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to be bawling. Like, I'm going to be a blubbering mess of crying tears all over the floor. And I couldn't shed a tear if you paid me. I was such in shock and just so excited and happy that as soon as he was like, "Will you marry me?" I literally leapt on top of him and like straddled him. I like almost knocked him off the stage. And then he like stood up and like there's like pictures of it and stuff. And then like everyone's cheering and we kiss and we're like, we go to walk off stage and then I realize he never like put the ring on me. And I was like, "Oh wait, go back." And then they're like just about to start playing a song and he's like, wait. So then like they just start playing and he like gets down on one knee and gives me the ring and then everybody's like, "Woo!" But I was like,
cute.
It was great. It was so great. And then he was like, "Yeah, and 35 of our friends are here on the roof." And then we had a whole party there. And it was like, then I started hysterically crying. And then they made a video. Herb had everybody that couldn't be there, family and friends from East Coast and friends here who couldn't come, make a video like welcoming him to the family. And I was just like hysterical. It was amazing.
I love it.
Best day. Best day ever.
It.
Yeah.
Okay. Guys. Mm-hmm. Anything else about the off? I'll admit I'm confused about the facts of the off-roading.
I don't think the off-roading thing went my way in terms of the phone call to her, but I think that it's only one data point in a constellation of experiences. But the first
we could call Chad. No,
one of the first fights that we had was one where I think that the point I tried to make to her was that, like, if you're fighting with someone, if you're losing your temper and you're angry and you're letting that come through in the fight in a way that is hurtful to the other person, you have something worth apologizing for. And so the power of an apology in the midst of a fight is hard to overstate. And so if you can at least recognize, "Hey, listen, I'm sorry. I'm not treating you the way I ought to treat you in this moment because I love you. I should always treat you well." That can be a place from which to begin sort of walking things back and, like, you know, and like having things be positive and that you as the other person are always justified in saying, like, "Hey, like, you're not treating me respectfully and kindly right now." And that's supposed to be a given in our dynamic because of who we're supposed to be to each other. And so
that was like when I hardcore fell in love with you.
Love that. So when did you say that to her?
We were going out to for a holiday to his parents and I was working in my office and he came to pick me up and I was stressed out. It all of a sudden got busy and we were supposed to be leaving and he was kind of like, "Babe, we gotta go with the traffic." So he was kind of like getting on me and I was like, "Babe, I just need a second." And then he kept being like, "Okay, well," and I was like, "Can you just fucking leave me alone?" I just like flipped out on him. And then he like walked very calmly out to the car. And then I was like, "Oh shit, I fucked up." And then I like finished what I had to do at work and I got out of the car. And he was just like, "No, we cannot speak to each other like that. I will not ever, ever let it get to that. And you shouldn't either." And it was just this moment of like, he didn't yell at me. He just was like disappointed dad, but like on like such a crazy like level. And I was like, holy fuck, he's right. Like, we can't yell at each other. Like, what's, you know, I mean, it's hard to stick to it, but I fell a lot more in love with you in that moment. I did. And then we had a great weekend. But for the record, the last thing I just want to say is like, we talk, you know, we fight, but I love this man so much. And like, I would not choose to fight with anyone else.
Oh, lucky me.
And I can't wait to marry him.
I love you too, baby.
Okay, we're going to end it there.
She's like, I'm going to go before they make a baby. So, yeah.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to Honey. I'm Julia Meltzer. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter as Drunk Actress. The show is produced by Ryan Middledorf. Our cover art is by Allie Monroe. And our theme song is by Aaron and Melissa. Thanks for listening. Bye.
What's a Creative Podcast Network?